Fisher wedding. This June, myself and Richard celebrated our 39th wedding anniversary. We got married in Cambridge, for he was a graduate student, far away from the kind of wedding we could have had if we'd gotten married in Buckeye. Ours was a quiet do and nae dance. But if I'd put myself in my mother's hands, I might have had a traditional Fisher wedding in Buckeye. And this is for I mind about weddings in Buckeye in the 1950s and 60s. An early indication of the occasion would be the cake in the baker's windy, and the grandeur and cost of the wedding would be estimated by the number of tears. The cake was our bridal fight icing and silvery favours, sick as miniature horseshoes, rings and flowers. The favours were given out to important guests as souvenirs of the occasion. Friends and neighbours were generous with presents. Even if they hadn't been speared to the wedding, there was no such a thing as a bridal registry, and folk just gied for the thought you'd need to set up your house. Nobody speared for what I was needing, and I got enough a lot of Pyrex and stainless steel. Fit was I going to deal with some money casserole dishes? And I'm sure if I'd had a big wedding at home, I'd have gotten mair. As it was, I wrote thank you notes for, among other things, 22 pairs of assorted pillowcases, a set of antimacassars, umpteen crochet doilies, and I, the Royal Albert. Now, dinna get me wrong and think I wasna grateful, but there was an awful lot of presents I never did find an ease for, and a power note would have been more helpful at the time. It was a custom to have a show of the presents. In them days, folk gied round to the house for the present and to see for die else the bride got. The presents were displayed in the best room, which was most often used for the laying out of the deed or wooden presents. Tables, covered in white sheets, held all the things the bride had been gien to stir her merit life, and all with the wee cards attached. When I gied my mum and granny to gie our pair of tables, I'd read all the cards and memorise them, so I could remind them after far gied fit. The groom's employers would maybe gie a silver tray with the names of the happy couple and the date of the wedding engraved on it. Sometimes the silver tray would be a clock. On display now were the bride's frock and all the frocks of the wooden party hanging for the picture rail, including the outfit of the mother of the bride. Oh, sick bonnie! Did you get your hat at the sales? Granny was full of admiration and took a great look at all the price tags that were hanging for the clays. Afterwards, we would be invited by in the house for refreshments, a thimble for a sherry and a finger of cake. There's a thing I'm glad I missed out on, though, and that's the blackening. When the bride and groom separately were blackened by their friends and workmates and paraded round the town in a kirt, accompanied by a band of thistles, tin cans and pots and pans. The nuptial victims were blackened with black boot polish and dressed up in all clays. I mind seeing a groom the night before his wedding out at his back door being scrubbed by his mother with a scrubbing brush so that he would be clean to go into the kirk in each day. Another sign of a Fisher wedding was when the boaties of the families would tie up in the harbour and put up fluggies atween the masts. My dad ends told me there were international flags that all the boaties carried in case they sailed into foreign waters. They were perfect for wooden bunting. On the day of the wedding, all the neepers and bairnies gathered outside the bride's house to see her life for the kirk with her dad. The bridal car was usually just Jimmy Mayne's taxi with white ribbons tied on it. The bairnies all clustered round the car, and as they were driving away, the fairer of the bride rolled down the windy and flung out handfuls of pennies, and we all scrambled on the ground and gathered them up. This was the wooden sprawl or scramble, and it was the very same at the groom's house, for the best man chucked the pennies out the car windy. And after that, we all got up to the kirk to see the bride come out. Sick comments. She's like a harn bag tied in the middle. And if the bride looked at her, why, oh, you're the bonniest bride we've ever seen. The meal at the reception would likely never vary for a plate of broth, roast beef or chicken, and sherry trifle for your pudding, and a modest glass of sherry for the toasts. At night, we argued back for the dance. The newlyweds led their guests in the grand march, the processional dance to get up and down the flier till we were all acht abreached. The music was provided by a local band, fiddle, accordion, piano and drums, for the Axum, Strip the Willow, the Canadian Barn Dance and the Boston Two-Step. A saxophone joined the group for slow foxtrots, quick steps and modern waltzes. We had refreshments when the band took a break. Big brown teapots pour tea into thick mugs. Sausage rolls, the staples of wedding funerals, fortified the dancers. A hearing basket filled with a crana conversation sweeties was correct round the room, and we filled our hankies with kiss me quick sugary lozenges. When the dancing started again, men discarded their jackets, rolled up their sark sleeves, and swung shoeless partners in a reel. High heels and a dean a paddy bar, 1, 2, 3 hop in a barrel. At a table away in the corner sat the all aunties, their abstemious orange juice spiked with vodka by impudent loons, singing Daisy, Daisy, gimme your answer do, and the Northern Lachs of Ali Merdeen. The crystal bar, suspended for the reef, spangled the dancers as they circled the flare in the hymnist waltz. Nobody wanted to gang hame. Far was the bride and groom, nobody kent.